And then today, we're going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. I might have said chapter 8, I'm sorry. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And we're going to take a look at Paul. And Paul's going to give himself as an example of somebody that's living with purpose, okay? Talking about the church. He's living with a certain mission, and his mission affects how he sees himself and how he sees his rights and how he lives and how he lives his life. And I want us as a church today to think about this. Okay? If we are going to follow Jesus, there are going to be things that we're going to have to give up. Right? Things that may be good that we give up in order to continue on a journey. We talked a little bit about that last week in Hebrews. You know, the Bible says, lay aside as you run your race, lay aside every weight. Not necessarily just the sin. Yet we want to lay aside sin, but we want to lay aside some of those things that are holding us back. And Paul does that, and he gives us a great example of that today. So if you're there, just follow along as I read through the first part of chapter 9 here. We'll go through the whole chapter quickly today. I'm looking at the time right now, and I have a short little outline, so you'll appreciate that. As we go, I want us to look at Paul, how Paul considers him and his ministry, and maybe there's some things in here that we can begin to emulate and take this. I want everybody to say, how is Paul doing this? And I want us to think, how is Paul thinking forward? And how is Paul setting some things aside for the advancement of the gospel, for the advancement of the mission of the churches he's at right now, which he's writing to the people in Corinth? Chapter 9, verse 1 says, am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are you not my workmanship in the Lord? If to others I am not an apostle, at least I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. This is my defense to those who would examine me. Do we not have the right to eat and drink? Do we not have the right to take along a believing wife, as do other apostles and the brothers of the Lord and Cephas? Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working for a living? Who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard without eating of any of its fruit? Or who tends a flock without getting some of the milk? Do I say these things on a human authority? Does not the law say the same? For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain. Is it for oxen that God is concerned? Does he not certainly speak for our sake? It was written for our sake, because the plowman should plow in hope, and the thresher thresh in hope of sharing in the crop. If we have sown spiritual things among you, is it too much if we reap material things from you? If others share this rightful claim on you, do not we even more? Nevertheless, we have not made use of this right, but we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that those who are employed in the temple service get their food from the temple, and those who serve at the altar share in the sacrificial offerings? In the same way, the Lord commanded that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living by the gospel. But I have made no use of any of these rights, nor am I writing these things to secure any such provision. For I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting. For if I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for boasting. For necessity is laid upon me. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this of my own will, I have a reward. But if not of my own will, I am still entrusted with a stewardship. What then is my reward? That in my preaching I may present the gospel free of charge, so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel. So this is Paul, and we'll read the second part of this in a little bit. But as we look at this, we got to ask ourselves, why would Paul start to write this way? What was going on that Paul starts to have to talk about his own rights and his own apostleship? So remember what the church at Corinth was. It was a church that was very gifted, a church that was probably very large as a whole. It was a church, though, that had allowed the world to speak into how they treated each other, to speak into how they did their work together, they did their service. They spoke into how the world speak into how they would value different things, right? And so in Acts, if you want to read, I believe it's around Acts chapter 18, we talk about the start of the Corinthian church. And Paul was the founder, if you want to call it that. He is the one who got the ball rolling. He went out there and evangelized. He went out there and taught people and started the church at Corinth. Now, years later, Paul is writing because of some problems that happened there at Corinth. They had, again, allowed the world to speak into the things that they were doing. They had allowed a competitive culture to then come inside the church, and people were taking some things too far. They were going beyond what they should have. They were competing, trying to lift themselves up over the expense of someone else. And so here, at this point in Paul's letter, he starts talking about himself, and he says, "Aren't I free?" He's trying to teach these folks a lesson because somebody is starting to say, "You know, Paul, I don't think you really have the authority to say what you're going to say." He said, somebody's saying to Paul, "I don't really think you should be an apostle." We know that Paul is an apostle, right? But being an apostle carries with it certain requirements. Have anybody ever asked you that or told you that? That being an apostle requires certain requirements? Okay, do you know what those requirements were, Nick? Since you're like, "Yeah, I remember this." So you've had to have seen Christ, okay? You've had to be given this authority from Christ, and so it's Jesus that Paul sees. Now, he wasn't with Christ while he was here on this earth. Remember that? But Paul did see Jesus. But it was after Christ was resurrected. It's after Pentecost had happened. We see Paul out there on the way to Damascus. And you remember what happened? As he was out there, the blinding light struck him. And God started speaking to him from the middle of that light and said, "Paul, why are you persecuting me?" Paul wasn't Saul at the time. Would change his name to Paul, or however we want to read that. Paul sees Jesus. Paul gets his commission straight from Jesus. And that's one of the requirements of an apostle. They have to have known Jesus. They have to have seen him. And Paul got his training from Jesus himself when he was there in on the road to Damascus, and later on while he was in Antioch. He says, "Am I not free? Am I not apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are you not my workmanship in the Lord? If to others I am not an apostle, at least I am to you, for you are my seal of my apostleship in the Lord." And so now Paul is getting at this idea. So what happens when you don't like something somebody is saying to you? It's like, what authority, what right do you have to tell me what to do, right? Because that's what we do, right? Sometimes. Yes? No? You agree with me? Yeah, so somebody sticks their finger in your face and they say, "You shouldn't do this." What do you want to do? You don't like that when somebody sticks their finger in your face, right? Who are you? Who are you to tell me what to do, huh? Yeah, and so when you have a competitive church culture, when you have a worldly church, one that was held the values of the world, but inside the church, you have some people who are like, wait, Paul, who are you to speak to me about this stuff? And so Paul says, "Look, aren't I an apostle? Didn't I start the church at Corinth?" He says, "Even if nobody else thinks that I am an apostle," he says, "I am to you." Because he is the one who got his commission from Jesus and went out and started this church, the church at Corinth. Isn't that interesting? And so as these folks move along, Paul then has to move and defend his apostleship. Now we kind of see this today, right? We kind of see this. It's kind of died down a little bit, but maybe you have heard the term, and I'm going to get a little political, not that I'm pushing a certain party or certain person, but you've heard people say, "Not my president," right? I have literally heard somebody look at me and tell me, he's not my president. Wait a minute, where do you live? Right? Oh, yeah, everybody's like, yeah, okay. But this is exactly the kind of thing that was happening here. Paul is, look, I'm an apostle. I started this church. And these people were looking at Paul and they were saying, not my apostle. And so Paul has to pause, like, wait a minute here. You guys are looking at this the wrong way. He says, I am living according to a certain set of principles. I am living a certain way for the good of this church. And he goes on to explain how he lives. And he sets it up and he says, first of all, he says, I have the right to work. Why does he even bring this up to them? In this day, if you were doing this type of work, and it was even expected by the law, we read that the church at Corinth should have been taking care of Paul's necessities. Because he's preaching the gospel to them, he's working for them, he's teaching them, he's showing them what's going on. Okay, they're expecting to take care of him in that way. But he says, I have a right to work. I can do what I need to do. That's what he says. He says, normally, this is the way it should be. He says, I have the right to eat and drink. I can take a long life. There's a lot of stuff that I can do here. He says, and is it Barnabas and I that have no right to refrain from working for a living, who serves as a soldier at his own expense, who plants a vineyard without eating of its fruit, who tends a flock without getting milk. He says, this is the natural order of things, right? Then he goes on to explain that from the law, that's supposed to be the way. So he says, look, even in the law, it's written that you're not supposed to muzzle the ox as he treads out the grain. Okay, what does that mean? Has anybody heard that before? How many farmers do we have in here? No farmers? Oh my goodness, where are we at? No. So what this is they would have these oxen pulling carts through the field as they were cutting. Sometimes they would load the grain onto the cart or they would be they would use oxen for different things. And so the idea was that as the oxen was treading out the grain or they were using a big grist mill or whatever, that the oxen would sometimes reach down and take some of that grain and eat it, right? And they weren't supposed to muzzle the ox. They were supposed to allow that animal to eat every once in a while. We used to do this when we ride through cornfields on horseback, back where I'm from. And the horses, sometimes as we go by, they'd reach over and they'd grab some. Anybody ride horses and do that one before? Okay. Sometimes they almost it almost feels like you're going to fall off because they get a piece of grass or something that gets stuck and they're like this, and you almost go over the shoulder. Anybody ever experienced that one? Okay, anyway, but that's what this idea is about. He says, look, the law says you should not muzzle the ox to tread out the corn. And Paul says, look, you think God is really interested in telling you this for the oxen's sake? He says, the purpose of this is that, you know, he's saying, hey, look, you need to take care of the ox when he works, okay? And Paul is referring to himself. He says, he's not speaking certainly does he not certainly speak for our sake? And that's in verse 10. He says, it was written for our sake because the plowman should plow in hope and the thresher should thresh in hope of sharing the crop. If we, speaking of himself, have sown spiritual things among you, is it too much if we reap material things from you? If others share this rightful claim among you, do not even more. He says, nevertheless, okay, that's normal. That's what's supposed to happen. That's what this church should do, is that the church at Corinth should be supporting Paul. He says, nevertheless, I have not taken that right. It is a right for Paul to receive support so that he can live and he can continue to do his job. Don't you remember what Paul is, his trade is? Do you remember that? Paul is a tent maker. So Paul would go and make tents and sell tents, and he started a business. This is how he started the church at Corinth. He started a business. He used that business to, number one, further the gospel, but he also made the tents and sold them so he could live. And then when Timothy and Silas came to Corinth, he got those guys to run the business, and he went out full-time and preached the gospel. And that's how they lived in Corinth. He says, but I have made, this is verse 15, but I have made no use of any of these rights, nor am I writing these things to secure any such provision. For I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground of boasting. For if I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for boasting, for necessity is laid upon me. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel, for if I do this of my own will, I have a reward. But if I, not of my own will, I'm still entrusted with a stewardship. What then is my reward? That in my preaching I may present the gospel free of charge, so as not to make use of my right of the gospel. So Paul, first of all, says, look, he says, the reason I'm doing this, number one, is I want the reward for it. Wait a minute. There's a reward for preaching the gospel? Is it? Doesn't that sound a little weird? There's a reward for preaching the gospel? That doesn't sound weird to you? That when we go out, Paul says, look, this is what I want out of it. He says, when we go out and we do the work of the ministry, when we do the things that we're supposed to do, we receive a spiritual reward for that. Paul says, I want my reward. That sounds really odd for Paul to say, doesn't it? He says, it's not that I'm not going to preach the gospel. He says, because he says, a necessity has been laid upon me to preach the gospel. He says, I'm going to preach the gospel. I can either do it free of charge or I can get supported in doing it. He says, for you guys, he says, right here and right now, he says, I want to do this free of charge because of the reward that's in it. Because there's things that are going on. Pay no attention to the blue light in the back. But, you know, so as we think about what's going on here, Paul says, look, I'm going to preach the gospel. He says, there is a certain reward that I want out of this. And he is living for that reward. He wants Jesus to say to him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. You've heard that before, right? He is looking for the praise that he gets from God, not from the church at Corinth. His motive is Christ. He lives with the mission that he is going to serve Christ and to please him. Now, how many of us think like Paul thinks? How many of us think, it is my mission to preach the gospel, and I'm going to preach the gospel. Necessity has been laid upon me. How many of us think in those terms? How many of us think that the souls of people are worth more than my rights? I mean, that's an easy thing for us to say. The souls of people are worth more than my rights. But it's difficult to play out, isn't it? It's difficult in the day-to-day. It's difficult in the mundane aspects of our daily lives. We get up in the morning, we go to work, or if we're retired, we go do something else, and we see people all the time, we see people all day, and then we come home, and we eat supper and go to bed, and then we get up the next day and do it again, right? But Paul says, look, the reason I do what I do, the reason I tent make is for the good of the church. The reason I do what I do is for the gospel. It's for the furtherance of the gospel. How many of us would say that? The reason I do what I do is so that I can preach the gospel too. Paul has a certain mission focus. He has a certain mindset that he's doing what he's doing. Yes, he gets support from it. And I'm not saying that, you know, we have our jobs and that we're not just supposed to get support. What I'm saying is we have our jobs, we get support from them, but we use our jobs for a specific mission mindset. One of the things that I think we, and myself included, here at Grace Life Church could use is a mission focus upon Jesus Christ. So much so that everything that we do during the day has the purpose eventually to preach the gospel to somebody or to teach somebody or bring them along in discipleship. right? Preaching the gospel can be for evangelism. Preaching the gospel can also be for sanctification purposes, discipleship purposes, right? So when you do what you do, do you get up thinking, how can I use this for Jesus? Paul, he says, look, I have the right to gain support, but I'm going to do it free of charge. Number one, because I want a reward, but because he's also missions-minded. And so he's going to sacrifice some things so that he can get the word out. So let's read on and how he does this. Verse 19. For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. And have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessings. Do you not know that in a race all runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I don't run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest, after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. Do you see the discipline that Paul brings into his own ministry? Do you see how Paul puts some things on the back burner and he presses forward always for the benefit of the gospel? Did you read some of that? He says, okay, he says, though I am free. So the truth is, I'm free, right? Paul is a citizen of Rome. He is free politically. Paul is free spiritually. Nobody controls him. He's only a slave to Christ. Nobody is Paul's master. He says, nobody owns me, but I am a servant to all. The reality is he's free, but in his mind, Paul says, you know, in order to minister somebody, I'm going to serve them. How do we do that? How do we surrender our rights for the sake of the gospel? Paul says, look, though I am free, I serve people. How do we have this mission mindset? Well, he says to the Jews, I became a Jew. What does that mean? What does it mean for Paul when he says, to the Jews, I became a Jew? Well, he says, when I'm looking to evangelize, or I'm looking to talk to Jews about Jesus, when I'm looking to get into that discussion, he says, I look like a Jew. I talk like a Jew. So he puts on the yarmulke, and he wears the robes with the tassels and all that kind of good stuff that the Jews from the law would do. Yes, meeting people where they are. He takes on some of their characteristics so that he can relate to them. Ever tried that? You know, let me tell you something that I did that was kind of crazy way back in the day. One night, I was bored. My wife was bored. And this was way back when I was a youth pastor. And so I had some hair left on top. Huh? Fewer kids, yes. It wasn't gray. It wasn't graying. I can't grow a beard now because I have so much white that it takes like 3 months before it actually looks like a beard because there's just so much white and it's just, ugh. But But when I was a youth pastor, at first it was really, really, really tough for me to connect with the kids. For some odd reason, I don't know. I was 25, 28, something like that. I should have been able to talk with those kids, and I should have been able to connect with those kids really easy because I was young like they were. I was doing stuff. I was fun at that time and all that. Yeah, just ask my kids. So one night, my wife and I were bored. I think it was snowy. They had this store where they would sell like discontinued goods or overstock goods or dented goods or whatever. And so my wife picked up a box of men's hair coloring. She said, "Let's make you a blonde." I said, okay. So guess what I did? Me being very dark-headed, I put the stuff on, and it came out in the nastiest reddish, yellow, ugly color that there can be. Okay, you're laughing at me. Yes, okay. So I looked at it, and I was like, "Oh, this is awful." And she looked at it. She says, "Yeah, it is." I said, "I'm going to shave my head." I said, "I'm going to shave my head." She says, "Okay." Sweet. So I went into the bathroom because I've been wanting to shave my head for a long time because I thought it was kind of cool. And so I took the things out and I got the old Bic out and I Bic'd it good. And I looked so much different that my kids, Jack and Becca, were just little itty-bitty at that time. And Becca came out of her bedroom after I had done it, you know, the next morning, and she says, "Are you my daddy?" And then I decided to grow a goatee with it. I changed my whole appearance. But the kids at that church thought it was cool. They did. And all of a sudden, I started connecting with them because they thought now I was cool. Now, I'm not saying that we all have to go shave our heads in order to talk to people about Jesus Christ. But what does it mean for us to be a Jew? Well, it means that I take on the characteristics. I do those things that are important to Jews. So if I'm around a bunch of Jews all day, it's very important that I don't do anything except for worship on Saturday. If I'm going to be around a bunch of Jews during this day and age, that's what I need to do. If I'm around a bunch of Gentiles, those who are outside the law, he says, I'm going to take on their characteristics. Not that he's going to sin, but he's going to talk like them. So in Minnesota, you root for the Twins and you root for the Vikings, right? Or maybe don't, because what's that other state? Anyway. No, but we take on those types of characteristics. My wife, bless her heart, is from the South. So she grew up with words like fixin' to and bless your heart and all that kind of good stuff. And she even had the accent to go with it. But over time, guess what? You develop an accent. And there are times when she says, instead of box, like you say in the South, she says box. Which is hilarious. And it's fun to tease her about. But that's what we do naturally. Where we are, we start to take on some of the characteristics of the people that we're around. But Paul says, I do that purposely. So let me ask you this. If you're going to live for the mission of serving Christ and getting out the gospel, what are you willing to do in order to get that message across? How are you willing to really get in and connect with people on that type of a level? To the Jews, I became a Jew. To those who were outside the law, I became as one who was outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, so I could minister to the weak. That's what Paul is saying. He has such a mindset, a mission focus, a goal, that he's going to take his rights and he's going to set them aside for the good of the church. That's why he says, I have become all things to all people, that I might save some. I do it for the sake of the gospel that I may share with them in its blessings. Then he says this, do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but one receives a prize? So run that you may obtain it. Now he gets into competition. Now he gets down. Now guess what he's doing? He's speaking to them with their value system and telling them how they should go about ministering. Do you catch this? This is really cool what he does here. He says, don't you know in a race, there's a whole bunch of runners. How many win? One wins. So he says, train and run to win that prize. But he's telling them, look, your focus is wrong. The church at Corinth, they were focused on number one. They were focused on me, myself, and I. They weren't willing to set aside their rights for the good of someone else. And Paul says, look, if you're going to run, he says, you got to have this mindset. You've got to have the mindset that there's going to be some things that I do without. So a runner runs. If you're getting ready to run a 5K so that you can win it, how many runners do we have in here? I used to run a really long time ago. I don't like running. I don't like running at all. But if I were going to go out and run a race so that I could have a chance at winning it, and I knew when that race was, I don't care if it's 6 months or a year from now, right? What should I start doing? Huh? Training. Okay, well that means there's some extra work involved. So that means I have to probably start lifting a little bit. That means I should probably start running a little bit. Okay. Less eating? No. How about this? Better eating. There we go. Okay. So I like my peanut M&Ms and I like my Reese's and I like my Snickers bars and my Milky Ways and my Cokes. Huh? Yeah, well, I like that stuff. Not that I have them all the time or every day, but I'm just saying, I like that stuff. I like eating stuff that's not necessarily, I like pizza. I don't necessarily like eating vegetables all the time. But if I were actually training to win a race, you know what I would do? I'd probably cut some things out of my diet and live sad. But that's what he's saying. That's the focus. Have you ever watched somebody who's, Steve McCone's over here, he's a big wrestling fan. You want to ask him about wrestling, ask Steve, okay? But have you ever watched the dedication of wrestlers trying to cut or make weight? These guys don't eat for days. They wear sweatsuits in order to get all the water weight out of themselves. They eat ice chips, for goodness sake, sometimes, in order to make weight, that all-important weigh-in, and they look like they're about ready to fall over dead. I remember watching that when I was in high school. All the kids come back, the wrestlers in the wintertime would have sunken-in eyes, except for the heavyweights, because they didn't have to cut weight most of the time. Their eyes were all sunk in because they just looked tired and they looked malnourished, but they were just, gotta make weight. But that was their focus. They lived like they wanted to win. In fact, we could almost say that Paul, he was in it to win it, right? Is that our mindset when it comes to our faith? Not that we're judging ourselves with each other. Not that we're trying to step over each other. Paul's not saying that. He says, it's not about number one. It's not about me. The focus is so that other people will come to Christ. The focus is so that Christ will be pleased. That is how we have to run it. That's the goal. That's the race we're in. Are you in it to win it? So, Grace Life. This is the prescription. Will we take our pills? Live every day. Restructure how we think about our life and our jobs and our families. Will we do that? This is for Jesus. Now, my question is this. We have the right, we're free, to not do that, right? Absolutely, we are. We're free not to do that. But we won't receive reward for it. We won't receive the well done, thou good and faithful servant. We can come and we just experience the same old every day, every week. So it's just the same old, same old. How many of you are tired of the same old, same old? I get tired of the same old stuff. What if, Grace Life, we started living day in and day out like we're in it to win it? What would that look like? How would that affect what we do? It might change some things. We might start to see some blessings that we never thought we'd ever see. It might change who we are at the very core. Let's pray. Jesus, there are some things in here that are tough to talk about, and when we try to live for you, sometimes we don't get past giving up our rights. It's my right to have this, it's my right to do this, it's my right to expect this. But Lord, when we think about ministry and what it means to each of us, I pray that we are all in it together to run the race disciplined, to begin to live our lives for you, and to start thinking about some of the things that we should just give up in order to be able to minister to someone else. I don't know what that looks like for each of us, Lord. But I ask you to help me. Help me to have this mission focus, this mission mindset. And I pray that you'll do that for everyone here. God, we thank you. Thank you for what you'll do. In Jesus' name.